motherfuckers know the deal.
I got that game of the year, game of the year, game of the year, game of the year, of the year, yeah, yeah, game of the
Hello,
year.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the third, I believe, episode of our VGU.TV Game of the Year Awards. I am your host for the evening, Graydon Webb. Or at least I'm taking the reins on this hosting thing. And I am joined today by the wonderful Alan Muir. How are you this evening? Nice.
I was thinking of something and it just never came to me.
You didn't come with some witty quip?
Oh, actually, yeah, I do. I'm not autistic. I'm just privileged.
Oh, that's excellent. Put that on a bumper sticker or something.
No, that's a whole thing. That was a whole thing about people, like the continuation of gatekeeping autism, which I don't see why you gotta do that.
Oh, okay, then don't. It's probably on a bumper sticker, and don't buy it.
Yeah, it's like people who gatekeep VTubing.
Oh well, they can have it. my other wonderful co-host here is Josh Miller. How are you?
I'm good. I'm still not sure I fully understand what VTubing even is.
It's virtual YouTubing, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Like it's a you have like a mocap rig.
Yeah, you have a either a 2D or 3D model that you're that tracks your movement and yeah.
Okay, I think I've seen my kid watch one of those. What was it? It's like a cat head that looks like it was just like one of those Apple emojis that talk over. Okay.
Yeah, that would be it. It seems strange, I think, because of the like tendency for it to be anime girls, but in general, and the way that like Alan has talked about it, for someone who isn't really comfortable in front of a camera, I can see that it's a unique way to be able to broadcast and make money off of streaming.
Two examples of that really prove why it's actually a really good concept: Zentraya and Iron Mouse.
Yeah, I've heard of Iron Mouse.
Those are names I've never heard of.
Iron Mouse was nominated for, that was the VTuber that was at the Game Awards. Well, that was nominated for Best Content Creator or whatever.
And won.
Did they?
Yeah, she won.
Oh, okay. Well, good. It's kind of the way that the gaming YouTuber space has kind of been shifting ever so slowly. So it's pretty cool to be like, hey, here's a spotlight on this person doing this thing. Hmm. But yeah, there's your lesson about VTubing.
Well, thank you.
Of course. And for you, dear listener, you are going to have some lessons taught to you this evening in the form of our next four categories for these long-awaited Game of the Year awards. So we are going to be tackling Best Narrative, which is a possibly brand new category for us. If not, we just haven't visited it in years. So Best Narrative, Best All Ages Game, which is the same, and we will explain what it is when we get there. Best Performance, sponsored by Man Engage of Immortality. And Best Ensemble Cast, sponsored by God of War Ragnarok. So, we shall begin with Best Narrative, which we have this described as we're picking the top three best stories of the year. I had in parentheses Best Direction because I know Best Direction was a category at one point, and I thought like, oh, should it kind of be included in this idea? Let's say no, because it's just a, I don't know, that takes it to a different direction. Haha, pun intended. So we'll stick with, like, these games are nominated for having what we consider some of the best stories of 2023. Our nominees are Star Trek Resurgence. Yes, you heard that right. Dead Space, the remake. Dordain. Bramble the Mountain King. Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Immortals of Avium. No, I will not get rid of that right this second. Spider-Man 2. Venba. Under the Waves. Star Wars Jedi Survivor. Deliver Us Mars. Baldur's Gate 3. Alan Wake 2. And, to my surprise, The Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog. So, this one I thought going into all of these awards would probably be the biggest bloodbath. But, I don't know. We may. I feel like. I don't know. I think. I want to say Alan played the most games last year. If not me. And I don't know how diehard we're going to be for a lot of these. But, I don't know.
Let me just say, out of all these games, I went through Star Trek Resurgence, Dead Space, Bramble the Mountain King, Tears of the Kingdom, Spider-Man 2, Jedi Survivor, Baldur's Gate 3, Alan Wake 2. I didn't finish all of them, but I went through as much as I could.
Okay, well, that's quite a lot of them. I feel like Josh has probably played how many of these?
Six of them.
Oh, wow. Okay. So we got a game going. All right. So how about we get rid of ones that we didn't like? Like, okay. Murderous Side of the Hedgehog. Let's start there. Who played that?
That was me.
Okay.
I'm fine with taking it off. I did want to bring it up here because it was a better story than I thought it was going to be. But okay. It's basically like baby's first visual novel. But it's very well told. The characters are all enjoyable. But it's also pretty basic in terms of like what you're getting out of it, especially compared to all these other games. But I think if you are going into it, like especially as a kid, which is why I think it might have a better shot in the next category. I think if you're a kid, you'll get a lot out of it as like an enjoyable narrative. But as an adult, it's just kind of competent. It's good, but nothing that's going to sweep you off your feet.
Okay. So in terms of it being a visual novel, it gave a good story for being like one of the first, like, I hate to say babies first.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a good beginner,
Yeah. No, that's good. And I definitely want to play that. Like I said, when we mentioned it before, I really wanted to do a video when it first came out and forgot. So is it short?
Yeah, I think it was only 1.5-2 hours, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely on the list for me. But yeah, we will be removing that. Good little shout out to that. I'm going to shout out two games that I know nobody played, and we can get them off this list, but I really want to shout them out. One of them I already did in a previous episode, but Under the Waves is an excellent little game that just took, truly one of my favorite games of the year. I believe, and don't get mad at me, I think it's made by Quantic Dream. If that not,
sounds right.
Okay, and but it's like it's a small game, and you can tell it's made by a smaller team that was kind of branching off of it somehow. So, like, I'm not gonna say, hey, we should shit on it automatically, but it's really, really good. I loved its gameplay, I loved its characters. We're gonna see it nominated again in Best Performance for one of its characters, and it's just really a really nice emotional story. And I would recommend it to definitely the both of you because it's just a right up your alley type of thing.
All right. Yeah. It looks like it was developed by Parallel Studio and published by Quantic Dream.
Ah, okay. So the Parallel Studio must be like rather new.
Yeah. It looks like they don't even have a Wikipedia page. So I'm guessing they are relatively new.
All right. Yeah, and it really, it felt like that game wasn't really played by many. I remember it being in some like a state of play or something. And then I think it might have gotten a Game Awards trailer for like a launch date. And then it just was, it just existed. And I've never heard anyone else playing it, but it was really, really a good time.
I was going to say, I think I've only seen it once, and it may have been that Game Awards trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's worth your time. As is Deliver Us Mars, which, if you haven't played Deliver Us the Moon, it's one of my favorite games of all time. I highly, highly recommend it. It is a narrative-driven puzzle platformer in space. Has a really, really good story and a unique way of telling that story through its gameplay. And Deliver Us Mars is its sequel. And so it made the list because it continues to be really good. It's it does this that cool kind of trope, but I enjoy it, where the main character of the first one exists within the second one, but is a side character. And instead, you are a totally new character with a new story. I guess that kind of spoiled what happens in the first one. But anyway, it's just good. It's just really, really good. It continues to be good. I think we'll probably get another sequel, and it will probably be on those Game Awards, because it's that freaking series. I don't know how it doesn't get more talk, because those games are phenomenal. But that's Deliver Us Mars. And now we're left with still a big list. Anyone want to fight for Venba? I see like a lot of these, I feel like maybe I threw on here, and I don't think I've got like a horse in the race. Did either of you play Venba yet?
I have not, no.
Alan?
I've not either. I'm still waiting. For some reason, I thought, you know what? I should go back and play Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
No! No! See, you know, I'm on this trip right now, and the one disc that I brought with me was Valhalla. So I'm like, I'm going to play it finally. I'm going to play it. And I've played so many other games that aren't Valhalla. Like, that game, I want it. I want to play it so bad, but I can't dive into that right now. It's so big.
You need to, like, that's that game released at the perfect time for people who liked the Assassin's Creed games, because of how big and expansive it was, considering that, like I said, the time period that or the date in which it released.
Was it 2020?
I believe so.
Okay, so yeah, that would have been perfect time, but I missed the boat. And now I miss two games in that series, and I may never get to them. I'll get to them. But hey, Venba is less than an hour. It's worth your time, and it's a fun little story, and I'm going to take it off the list.
It's on Game Pass, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I beat it. I beat it just in one little sitting at night, not even thinking it was going to be so short, but it just takes you right through it. Doesn't dip at all. And I think that's why I put it on here, because I really liked the story it told, and it just did it in a way that was very easily accessible. So highly recommend that one. A lot of fun, but it is gone.
I personally think that we can take Dead Space off the list.
Okay. Yes, I was going to say that too.
Yeah, because like I think I was personally, I'm the one who added it, and as I mentioned in the previous episode, like a previous deliberation episode, I had played through most of the original Dead Space, but I never actually beat the original OG Dead Space. So, aside from certain elements from the later from Dead Space 2 that made it in, like that were just added into Dead Space Remake because of it just make things easier narrative wise, it's still basically the same game as it was back in 2008. So
that kind of breaks the unspoken rule that is, it's not really a narrative of 2023.
Yeah, it's more of a, like a little, some sprinkles of new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But most, but like 95% of it is still the same story.
Yeah, which I think, I mean, we didn't do best narrative, or maybe we did that year. I remember talking about Final Fantasy, the remake, in this kind of context, yeah, and being like, well, technically it is a new story, and you had to go on that big diatribe mm-hmm. about it.
And I don't remember a single word of it.
I think you may have bowed out, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think it was because I was playing it at the time.
Yeah, and now it's, I mean, it's weird that now that's kind of common knowledge. Like, because that remake became so big, it's not really even like, I'm going to keep it game. Safe. I'm going to keep it safe, but it's not even really like a spoiler anymore. And it's just weird that people kind of just openly talk about the directions that that game goes. But alas, Dead Space does not do that and change the game a lot. So we take that off the list. It's getting shorter and shorter. I'm going to take one for the team and take Immortals of Avium off the list. Simply because I know that you guys have not... Well, wait! Have you guys played it now?
I played, like, the first three chapters.
Okay. I did
it's too. It's just not my kind of game.
Huh. All right.
It had the potential to be so much more.
Hmm. In what regard? Like, what would you like to be different?
From what I played, there was a feeling of emptiness. Like, I expected it to be a full-on RPG based on the studio and the developer and people who were at said developer.
Okay. All right, and so it wasn't as robust as you had hoped.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll give you that. I know it's gotten a lot of complaints, but I've also heard a surprisingly good amount of stuff about good stuff about the game as well, and that's all I can ask. Because I do think it was a good little try for them. But especially after today's news about EA, they can go fuck themselves. And I'm kind of okay to get rid of this game. Where do we go next? Because now we're getting to things where we've all kind of played them. I still haven't played Baldur's Gate.
I think Baldur's Gate deserves to be on there. Okay.
It does.
The like breadth of like how deep all their stories go and the paths you can take to get to them, how deep they go for like each individual characters and their own storylines. It's one of those like just immense undertakings from that team. I'm surprised they did it as well as they did. It's a fantastic narrative game that I could see it easily taking the top spot.
And you came away from it feeling like every character was fleshed out enough for you?
The thing is, I haven't even beaten the game because I think I've put in 60 hours. And I think I am basically at the end of chapter 2. But like just based on what I've seen, like I would easily put it number 1. Just from everything I've seen so far. And knowing that there's still so much more to go. And having only heard good things about like how a lot of that stuff was wrapped up.
Okay. Well then fuck it. The way everyone's talked about it, and I think it would be a crime if we didn't include it in our top 3 at least. So I'm just gonna like, I don't know how to make it look good on here. I'm using my phone's version of Google Docs and there's very limited formatting. Maybe I can change the color.
Okay, now I don't see anything.
I see you. Yeah, you highlighted it. Yep. And okay, yeah, simple underline will suffice. All right. So we got one kind of locked in.
Now this is the point where we all stab each other.
Yeah, this is where it gets hard. Who's played Alan Wake 2?
Me. It's a variation on my name. I had to play it.
Correct. That's true. So it's tough because I know that's like a big game. I know that it had a cool story. But I also feel like other stuff on here like held a better, like especially for more than one of us, the other games like were kind of bigger.
Only threw this one out there because I know all of us have played it and I think we all liked it. How would we feel about Bramble the Mountain King being in the top three as well?
I'm considering that. I am. Because, like, in terms of stuff that we all touched, maybe Alan didn't play Dorda, but I like Bramble better in terms of its narrative. Then should we just scratch Dorda for the
sake of it? I was thinking about saying that, but I was like, I'll hold off just a little bit longer in case.
Yeah, screw it. Let's do it.
Yes, between the two, I would definitely go with Bramble.
We talked about Dorda before. It's a very fun little game. It's got a really cool story, like a nice little story. And it's definitely worth playing just for the visuals alone. Mm-hmm. But yes, we will say goodbye to it and move a little further. So Bramble, I would be okay with locking that in. Alan?
Considering the effect it had on me, and I didn't even beat the game yet, just the way like the everything is handled, narrative, presentation, it's closest thing I've ever experienced to an interactive Brothers Grimm tale.
I was going to say interactive nightmare.
Well, yeah, like what's the difference?
True.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Okay, yeah, now
I'm happy with that because I think we're not like saying a whole lot about Bramble, but it's definitely kind of going blind with Bramble.
It's best if you don't know what to expect because you'll have no preconceived notions of just the name alone, the name of the game alone, Bramble the Mountain King.
Yeah, I kind of hate that I even watched any of the trailers because it kind of spoiled some stuff that I think would have been really awesome if it went in blind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just know that it's definitely worth your time and it's on Game Pass. So, and it's pretty short.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours or something, 5 hours. But yeah, here's where
somewhere between 4 and 6.
Okay.
Right.
Here's where we fight.
Okay, so I will say okay to taking Tears of the Kingdom off the list because for all the all the near 100 hours I played of the game, I was simply just for 9 times out of 10 I was just exploring the world, making my own adventures, and that's the way everything is told. Like it is inferior, and I have a feeling it's inferior in plot to Breath of the Wild.
Okay.
And
it's not worthy of best narrative.
Yeah. If we had a category, if we had the 7 out of 10, like the best average game.
Mm. You would put Tears of the Kingdom on that?
No. I was gonna say if we had that, but just for the, like, we just took the just
the narrative part of it,
or no, just best gameplay. Like if we went back to how we used to do things, like how we're trying to chase the trend of making this like very cookie cutter, like awards, it'd be like best gameplay, Tears of the Kingdom, but
otherwise it doesn't really knock your socks off.
Yeah, like when we eventually get to best moment, there are moments where there's a moment specifically where it was incredible, but it had nothing to do with the story. It had to do with something that happened that happens in the game world. Feel free to take Tears of the Kingdom off the list.
Will do. So, for those of you listening at home, we are now left with Star Trek Resurgence, Spider-Man 2, Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and Alan Wake 2.
Alan, I'm going to have to ask you to tell me why Star Trek would need to be over all these other games I've heard a lot of good things about.
I also had put this here.
Yeah.
And
oh, you did?
Yeah, it might have even just been my addition. I wouldn't put it above these. I love Resurgence. I really, really do. And I want to like give it something by the end of these awards. But I fucking love Jedi Survivor, man. Jedi Survivor is one of the freaking greatest games I played all year. And it is so... it doesn't beat Resurgence.
Okay, if we're going to take Resurgence off the list, let me at least just sell people in the game who haven't played it yet. Or who are on the fence.
Please do.
Okay, so in the first season of TNG, there's an episode called The Last Outpost. And it's notable for being one of the worst episodes of the entire series. Not due to the episode, not due to the plot of the episode, or mainly the fact that it was not the best experience for people being, or it wasn't the best first impression of the Ferengi. And the episode had to do with an empire that had existed before, like long before the Federation was even a little dream in Severum Cochrane's head, or even The Last Outpost is basically the prequel to Resurgence, as the Takan Empire, which was introduced in Last Outpost.
Oh, okay.
And okay, so you know how Portal looks in Resurgence?
Yeah.
He looks much a little more scary in the actual episode because of the way the prosthetics were done.
Oh, jeez.
Like if you look up a picture of a character from that episode, it's a little bit of a nightmare. But the fact that they took the foundation of the game being a forgotten episode of TNG from what is considered to be the worst era of the show is ballsy.
Mm.
Obviously you need to have Spock there to give it some legitimacy. But there are moments where, you know, I'm gonna save this for best moment, because what I was gonna say has to do with one of the best moment nominees.
Okay. Yeah, I forgot that that's nominated there too. So
yeah, so
yes, I don't mind getting rid of it here. It'll get its due.
It was
a good game though. Even as a, like, I'm not a Star Trek fan, and I fell in love with it.
Yeah, it honestly, it would have worked better as an interactive movie rather than a video game.
Yeah, some of its gameplay is a little weird. But I think it was nice to see it as like a Telltale-like experience. So not too bad. I can't complain about it. But it is not best narrative material, so it is gone. So we leave us here with... Guys, I want to say it's going to come down to Spider-Man 2 versus Jedi Survivor. Well, who comes out on top here?
I can't speak to any of those games.
Really?
Yep, haven't been able to touch any of them.
Alan, which would you say if you had to pick one of those two?
I would have to say Jedi Survivor, mainly due to the fact that if we're looking at both, like if we're comparing and contrasting both games on a narrative level, Jedi Survivor is the more linear one.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, well, yes, there is some, like there is a hub world that you can go, you can explore.
And side quests.
Yeah.
But I think that Jedi Survivor's worlds feel more varied and it just adds to that narrative more. Whereas Spider-Man is like, it's kind of comic stories that you basically kind of know. But Jedi Survivor, like, it tells this brand new story. And it's expansive and it's exciting.
Well, okay, I'll mention this because I feel like I have to. Both of these games are building off the prior installments, with Jedi Survivor building off of Fallen Order and Spider-Man 2 building off of Spider-Man 2018 and Miles Morales.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the DLCs from the DLC from Spider-Man, which explains which I still have yet to play.
Oh.
So when I ran into a certain character, I was like, oh, okay, so that's, yeah, that makes sense. But while Jedi Survivor has, okay, so Jedi Survivor has a really good story, has maybe a quest or two that is good.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man 2 has a good story that has, but it's filled, the side quests, like the side quests in Spider-Man 2 are some of the best experiences I've had with the Spider-Man game.
Oh.
So like there's one where there are two in particular. One that you do as Peter, and then one you do as Miles.
Hmm.
The one with Peter, you're in a little suburban area.
Mm-hmm.
And you're helping a blind woman who heard something rummaging through her garden, or not her garden, her backyard, and you end up going on this tracking mission to figure out what exactly was going on, and you find that it's actually a robot tiger, or uh-huh. It's like it's one of the robots that Kraven's crew uses.
Mm-hmm.
And you find out that its master was the beast master was killed, and they tried to kill the robot, and you basically Genki hacks it.
Uh-huh.
And basically fills up its the CPU with dog videos.
Okay.
As a way to get it to calm down.
Huh.
And you end up playing fetch with it, And then you end up having to fight the hunters who are trying to destroy it. And you end at the end of the quest, like at the end of the side quest, you end up going back to the woman, to the blind woman's home. And prior to, in the beginning of the mission, she says that she's allergic to dogs, and it's why she can never, because Peter asks her if she has a service animal.
Uh-huh.
And basically you end up, the side quest concludes with you giving, the woman me. The
robot dog.
Yeah. And it wasn't something where it was like played into into a comedy thing. It was played into a genuine interaction and a genuine reaction. And it was amazing. And the side quest with the Miles one, a woman loses track of her grandfather.
Oh yes, I did hear about this one.
Yeah, you end up going to, you end up tracking him down,
mm-hmm.
and you find out that he, I think he's got,
dementia.
Yeah, dementia. And has to do with his wife who passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who wrote that that particular quest.
Uh-huh.
But it got me, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely, in the essence of being able to wrap this one up, I think Spider-Man 2, or Spider-Man in general, is excellently written, and there's no mistaking that. I mean, the original was great. This one, from what I've seen of it, and from what you say, it's also very great.
There's a moment that it was also, I also nominated a certain part of it for best moment.
Uh-huh.
So I'll explain more when we get to that. We eventually get to that part. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely Spider-Man 2 will get its due diligence throughout this list. And, but I really think that Jedi Survivor just kind of touched us both in a way. It's consistently exciting and emotional, and it just checks all the boxes, and I love it. I think that it's definitely deserving of this, and I know that means that I sneakily erased Alan Wake 2, but people have heard that that's good. People know it's a good game.
I would still love to get to it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's also going to be in other categories, so it may not be the end of it. But looking at this, are we thinking Baldur's Bramble Star Wars?
I would be okay with that.
Alan?
Yeah. Yeah, all right. That's fine.
Cool. Because I think Baldur's is the no-brainer in terms of work that went into it and just the undertaking that it is. Bramble is kind of like our hidden gem, and Jedi Survivor is the other one. the other excellent narrative that's right up there. So that is our best narrative category. Went a little long there, but it went smoother than I thought that it would, so no blood was shed. This one may be also difficult, but I think we can bang it out pretty fast. Best all ages game, which essentially it's very similar to another one of the categories that I don't think we've talked about yet. But basically for this one, top three, it's good for anyone. Also includes things like party or co-op games, because we don't have a category for that, but like that's essentially it. It's like a party co-op game type category that anybody can pick up and play no matter what age you are. So our nominations are, well, nominees. Our nominees are WWE 2K23, Cassette Beasts, Pikmin 4, Station to Station, Party Animals, Disney Speedstorm, The Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and Disney Illusion Island. I think I want to... One of my definites would be Disney Speedstorm. Is that a crazy hot take?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a great kart racer, and it looks amazing. It has tons of IP that everybody recognizes. I think that would be a great pick.
It's so fun. It's so easy to, like, pick up and play. There's something for everybody in terms of characters, stages, music. Like, anyone could walk in the room and be like, oh, look at that thing. I know that thing. And it's just so good. It's so addicting. It got me interested in a battle pass for the first time. Like, Alan, have you played Speedstorm at all?
I have not.
Okay. I love it. I mean, it might be too early to lock it in, but I just want to put a pin in that would be one of my personal picks. What's one that we think we could get rid of? Anybody seeing anything?
I put one on here that I don't think either of you have played, Cassette Beasts.
I played it very briefly, a half hour of it, just so I could say I did for these awards. I didn't have a whole lot of love for it, but I'm also just not a huge, like, Pokemon-like person.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. I mean, like Pokemon, I think anybody of any age could easily get into it. The biggest drawback I could see for this category is that there are some difficulty spikes that can get real rough, especially if you're a younger player. So really, for that reason alone, I'd be okay with taking it off.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Another one... How do we feel about Pikmin 4? Do we want to die on that hill?
I've not played it, so I have no real thoughts on it.
I know Alan played it, but I also know that we've kind of talked about it in another category. And, like, my reason I had stated about how there's, like, you know, kind of a timer at the end that I know as a kid I would have hated that, to be like, well, I gotta go and wrap this whole thing up and run home before the darkness eats me. Like, that just doesn't stand out as much of, like, a, you know, forgiving type of game. But also I do agree that, like, it looks cutesy, and but I don't know, Pikmin always felt like it was a bit more strategic to me of Nintendo's catalog than some of the other things. Like a Mario, you can kind of just fuck around in and still kind of make it to the end.
Yeah.
Which may be a debatable thing to say, but Pikmin always felt like you kind of need to use your brain more for this one. But I don't know. I mean, who else played that? Just Alan?
I think just Alan.
Thoughts on Pikmin, on removing Pikmin 4?
Okay, so I personally think that the first three in the list should be taken off.
Okay. Were they all your additions?
I believe so.
All right. I mean, I was going to bounce to those soon, and I was going to say, I remember you said Station to Station fell off for you.
And, yeah, even then, if you are playing it, you're either trying to think way too hard about how to set up, like, set the layout of the area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
It gets complex.
It gets complex. WWE 2K23, I imagine that Okay. I didn't think I was new to this, but back in my day of 2000, the year of our Lord 2000, playing WWF WrestleMania 2000 on the N64, it was like it's just basically just complete inverse. But
like it doesn't deliver on that nostalgia.
No, actually, it's one of those things where WrestleMania 2000 is more complex than W2K23.
Okay.
Like there are the move sets in WrestleMania 2000, No Mercy, and all those games. Completely, I played that game so many times, or those games so many times. I still don't know how to do a finishing move in either WrestleMania 2000 or No Mercy.
Jeez. Well, and then that kind of makes it sound like 2023 would fit this bill pretty well if it's more simplified. But I guess the main question is it not as enjoyable?
It's enjoyable, but I imagine that there are certain things in the game that aren't for everyone.
Okay.
Like, microtransactions.
Yes. And I mean, I'll say Speedstorm does have a lot of microtransactions. A lot. I'm saying that to be like, I don't think that bogs down it being an all-ages game. I mean, Fortnite has a ton of microtransactions. Children love it. Roblox. My God. But
what do the microtransactions in Speedstorm do? Like what do they get you?
I mean, you can buy like racers with it, cosmetics, mainly like XP type, like the things required to level up your character. But you can earn them all pretty much too in the game.
Yeah, with 2K23, there's kind of a similar thing, but then there's like you can play a bunch of matches to earn in-game currency to unlock legends from the in-game store.
Hmm.
But even then, there's still like the my faction mode, which feels like my faction is basically the equivalent of FIFA Ultimate Team.
Oh.
Or Madden Ultimate Team, like those, that type of.
So just a microtransaction frenzy.
Yeah.
Okay. Then yeah, it can leave.
WWE 2K24 in stores for early access on Tuesday.
Oh God!
I pre-ordered it.
Nice. I can't wait to hear your critiques on it for the whole year. When you like, you'll drop it and then go back to it, then hate it again, and then go back.
I'm totally not gonna have a match between Cody Rhodes and CM Punk.
Perish
where Triple thought. H is the special guest referee.
Well, now we're down to five. We got Party Animals, Speedstorm, Murderous Sonic, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, and Disney Illusion Island. I have yet to play Super Mario Bros. Wonder, but is it a lock?
Yes.
I would say so, yeah.
I want to... okay, and I will take your word for it, but then I also will follow up question. Josh, have you played this with one of your children?
Or I have, yes. Your
children?
Yes, both kids love it.
Okay, then we're locking it in. Not that that should mean that, like, that's the way to do it, but it kind of does add, when you got a dad on the team that can confirm it's good for children, I don't have the fucking underline. Oh, there we go. Turn it sideways. There it is. Okay. So that's that. Let's see. Anyone else play Party Animals this year or at all?
I have not. It looked like it would be a lot of fun, but it's something I would want to play with other people. I just haven't had other people to play it with.
I mean, I hate to take it off because I do think that it is a really good one on here, but in terms of just like no one else playing it, I can take it off. I will say we should totally do a game night on it. It's kind of like if Gang Beasts was more about like different modes. So like think, I don't know, just any one of the, one of those party type games that's like, hey, we have all these different modes. Like I don't want to say Fall Guys. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but like there's some really fun little modes and it, yeah, utilizes Gang Beasts physics, but it still feels like a game all to its, on its own. And it also has some like daily challenge or battle pass type thing, because, you know, every game has to, but none of it feels too in your face. And I don't know, I played it actually last time I was on this this current dog sitting trip. I played it for a couple of days and I was just like, this is really addicting. So I got sucked right into it. Highly recommend Party Animals. It's actually, it's gotten pretty big because they did that Cult of the Lamb crossover. Like people are still playing it. But yeah, that is that. So say we have a pin in Speedstorm. Murder of Sonic versus Illusion Island. I know Alan loves Illusion Island. And I know that Josh said Murder of Sonic felt good for this category. So who wants to fight harder?
I will fight harder. I'll just stay my case.
Okay.
Illusion Island, while I've not played it with any other people, it fits perfectly what an all-ages game would be. With the look of it, the gameplay, the feel, all that. The aesthetic is very, very kid-friendly, but also adult-friendly for people who want to have an interactive Mickey Mouse experience.
I love the phrasing of that. What an interactive Mickey Mouse experience.
Yes, but it's better than a interactive autism experience.
What? I would assume, yes, that's...
shout out to DJ for that tweet. That tweet he made.
About what? About being autistic?
No, it was... Okay, this is going to be... Sorry for getting out into a tangent, listeners. DJ quote tweeted a something like the,
I got it, I see.
Yeah, the 2999 autism experience. And it's just like
autism simulator.
yeah, and I'm just like, wow.
My god, autism reality experience. It's my favorite video game. Jesus.
But that going back to what we're actually should be talking about
to Mickey Mouse.
To Mickey Mouse. While Illusion Island is longer than The Murder of Sonic, it's maybe two or three times longer. So it's like maybe four and a half, five hours.
Mm-hmm.
I have not played The Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog, but I feel like these are both two games that are made for the audiences of the respective character.
Correct. Yeah, they're kind of like deep cuts for fans of this IP.
Yeah, and I feel like that if, like, it's Disney Illusion Island, goes like it gets hits certain points where it gets repetitive and has possibility to wear out its welcome, where based off everything I've seen from The Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog, you play it, you're done, you have a good experience, and you don't need to go back. Or if you want to go back, you can. I have to go with Murder Sonic the Hedgehog.
Wow. I mean, there you go, Josh. You don't even really have to make a case.
Which is good, because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to. It's just hard to do with a visual novel.
It's a hard category, the rules that I gave it. Apologies. But I feel like Illusion Island always had the vibe of the Rayman Origins games. And yeah. I feel like that's a really cool party style of game, like a 4-player couch co-op game. Yeah, you can't get any better than that. So in terms of like a party game, it seems great. But I like what you're saying about how, like, at all ages, at its core, is perfect for anyone. It's like anybody could really get into it. And I mean, I know a visual novel is a niche category, but I think what draws people in is that IP that people know. And if even a child who enjoys Sonic could pick up this game and think, oh, this was fun, like it was a story about Sonic, then I'm going to give it to him. I think that that's good. And thusly, which I don't think is a word, the Disney Speedstorm, Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog, and Mario Bros. Wonder, I think all do kind of that perfect concept of this is a great approachable method to this style of gameplay. Does that make sense?
I would agree with that.
Okay. As I'm really not trying to like say, oh, fuck you guys, I'm keeping Speedstorm on here and Illusion Island can't live. But I just think that it works in terms of like, I don't know. I hate to say it, but I say it a lot. Baby's first kart racer, baby's first visual novel. I mean, even Mario Wonder, I've heard people say like is a really good, like it's like a good first Mario game, right?
It is. Yeah.
So like, and that's a genre all its own that then opens you up for like side scrolling puzzle platformer type of thing. So yeah, let's go with that then. And shout out to Disney Illusion Island because it has been on quite a few of our categories, and I'm happy that it was a good game. Do we want to say Wonder, Speedstorm, Murder?
That's what I was going to throw out there.
Alan, do you like that?
Yes, I put that shit on everything.
Okay, awesome. So that is best all ages game, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, Disney Speedstorm, and the Murder of Sonic the Hedgehog. Now we get to best performance, sponsored by our queen, Manon Gage of Immortality fame. These are the top three knockout performances of the year. If you've heard our Game of the Year awards, you've heard this award, I think, every year, and you know how it's done. I'm going to go through a bunch of names. We're probably going to get rid of half of them, but everyone on this list does a great job that lifts up the game that they are in. And I'm sorry I didn't play a lot of the games. So, and also sorry if I butcher your name. We begin with Cameron Monaghan, who is Cal Kestis in Jedi Survivor. Nick Apostolides, I hope that's right, playing Leon Kennedy in Resident Evil 4 Remake. Gunnar Wright, playing Isaac Clarke in Dead Space the Remake. Yuri Lowenthal, playing Peter Parker in Spider-Man 2. Barbara Weber Scaff, I didn't put her character name. Shit. Damn, I fucked these ones up. She plays the dude's wife in Under the Waves. I'll talk about her later. Carrie Payton, he played Pan in Stray Gods. Andre Pena, playing Louis Serra in Resident Evil 4. Genevieve Buckner, playing Ashley Graham in Resident Evil 4. James McCaffrey, the James McCaffrey? Isn't Isn't that the kid? Of Ryan McCaffrey. I'm thinking of. Sorry, James McCaffrey playing Alex Casey in Alan Wake 2, and Melanie LaBird playing Saga Anderson in Alan Wake 2. So my God, a lot of names on this list. A lot of things that I think Alan added because I certainly didn't play most of these games. I'm gonna get rid of one of them because you easy to get rid of. Barbara Weber Scaff and Under the Waves. She is never seen in the game. She's only she's the wife that your main character talks to as he's living in a submarine base, and she just gets voicemails from him, and occasionally they do talk on the phone, and she just kind of puts the most emotion into her role of playing this woman who is struggling to be a single mother because her husband has a job that involves him being away from home a lot, and their marriage is kind of on the rocks. And she goes through like this sentimental, like, I miss you, to then like, oh, I'm so pissed that you never are around. And it's just this really good performance, like really emotionally tragic performance of kind of driving his story along as well as what you play, obviously. And yeah, it stood out for me. I thought I would just put that on the list to be like, hey, here's a shout out. All the performances in that game are pretty damn good, but she stood out to me because you don't even see her, and she's a pretty crazy, excellent character. So I will get rid of that one. that one, though, I don't want to get rid of. What are we thinking here? Who wants to fight for what?
I can't really fight for any of them since I haven't played. Really, the only one I've played is Dead Space, and I can't say one way or another if Gunner is better than anybody else on here.
Was he the original Isaac Clarke?
Yes, he was.
Okay. Well, that's a good question. These remakes, like, were they all the same cast?
No. Well, Resident Evil 4, obviously, Nick Pastoletis. Obviously, that's Sam Leon from Resident Evil 2 remake.
Okay. So you've, like, he's been with the series for a while. You know him.
Yeah. Obviously, Andre Pena and Genevieve.
Buckner, I think.
There was obviously different takes on the character compared to the original game.
Okay. And if you had to choose like one of them, what's like the most standout of Resident Evil 4 characters?
Louis Sarah.
Okay. Would you be cool with knocking off the other two just in the essence of shortening the list?
Okay.
Because I think that we can just say that it sounds like there's a pretty damn good cast in Resident Evil 4. Everybody plays their part pretty damn good. And, yeah. But Louis Sarah stands out. Do you want to do the same for Alan Wake? Like, pick one of your two? Or perhaps get rid of them, whatever you're feeling?
We can actually get rid of Gunnar Wright, because...
Okay.
While the story of the Dead Space remake is more or less the same as the original,
mm-hmm.
rather than having it be a silent protagonist as it was in the original, you have Gunnar Wright.
Oh.
Talking. Yeah, actually, you have Isaac talking in this game.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he was silent originally.
Yeah, not only that, he had a different face.
Hmm.
Like, if you look up Isaac Clarke, 2008 Dead Space, or just if you just do a search like Isaac Clarke comparison between the remake and the original, you'll see that there are two vastly different character models, or at least faces. And it's ironic because kind of like they model new Isaac off of Gunner rather than, I don't know, it's,
that's kind of like Spider-Man.
Yeah. And no, well, no, it's, he was Isaac, Gunner Wright was Isaac in all three games.
Okay.
So, but we can take Gunner off the list.
Okay. I'm down with that. Josh sounded down with that. So now there are six. I suppose. Oh, go ahead for it.
I'm okay with getting rid of Melanie, but I'm just gonna say this now. I think that I'm just James McCaffrey. I'm locking him in, at least as for me.
Okay, I will ask: is he the guy with the black wavy hair that's like shown in everything?
No, that's actually.
Is that Alan Wake?
that's the actual actor who plays Alan Wake. James McCaffrey is Alex Casey, who is basically Max Payne. He was Max Payne before he passed away.
Okay.
Like he was the original, like he was in like Max Payne 1, 2, and 3. And in Max Payne 3 they changed his face because, you know, they weren't going to have him be Sam Lake in Rockstar game. But he does such a great job in this game as Alex Casey. And the whole thing, like, there's, when we get to Game of the Year, like, full-on Game of the Year, I have a lot to say about Alan Wake 2.
My God. I feel like you're the only one that got to play it. Josh, you didn't play it, right?
No, part of the reason was because I didn't really like the first game all that much, so I wasn't sure how much it played similarly. Like, I like the tone and the story of Alan Wake 1, but the actual playing the game, I just was not crazy about.
So, okay. I'll say this, and this will inform, I hope it informs both of you and listeners on, like, at least everyone who hasn't played Alan Wake 2. This is basically taking everything from Alan, from 2010, 2011, from the first Alan Wake, and everything from Alan Wake going forward. So Alan Wake 1, Alan Wake and American Nightmare, Quantum Break, Control, taking all that, and even Max Payne to a lesser degree, and rolling it into Alan Wake 2, which is like Alex Casey is basically Max Payne. He's Max Payne without going as far to say, yes, this is Max Payne. Because, and I'll just explain this now as an example. The first chapter you're playing as Alan Wake, you're dealing with like the way you're shifting around the environment. Based on the narrative, like in the in-game narrative, Alex Casey is you're writing a suit, like a very meta thing about his investigation into either, in this example, like either a cult, a gang, and it's James McCaffrey's performance as Alex Casey just drives home the fact that he kept going till the end.
Okay. Sorry, I'm trying to like think. I mean, I heard what you said. I did listen.
I was worried.
I promise. I heard you. All right. So then thinking. Because you make a wonderful case there for all of that performance. And honestly, the game. which I want to, I don't know. I thought I was going to stay away from it because it seemed more survival horror-y than the first one. And I've never played the first one, but I want to.
Okay. So I can answer this right now. I can just say this right now.
Yes.
The opening of the game, the first boss of the game, it has to do with the character from the first game.
Okay.
And they don't give the best explanation of how you should handle that first encounter, or the encounter with that character, like the boss encounter. So I have a feeling, I think that there are some people who quit the game, like stop playing after or during that first boss. So
gotcha. Well, I'm cool with keeping him with James McCaffrey on there. I think we'll get rid of Melanie LaBird. Sounds like she also delivers a good, like, I'm sure the performances in that are stellar. Let's see. Looking into our time and what I want to do here, narrowing this down. I'm going to bite the bullet on Kerry Payton because I know no one else has played Stray Gods. You definitely should. I got to finish that. But it's a damn good game. A musical Telltale-like. And it is, yeah, just so much fun. Kerry Payton from The Walking Dead fame, and a lot of other things. But, he plays Pan, and he's kind of like untrustworthy and shifty. And he sings because everybody sings, but he's actually really good at singing. And yeah, just, I like his performance a lot. And now we are down to, we have four. We've locked in James McCaffrey. I'm cool with it. Josh, if you have something to say against that, you
nope, may. I'm fine with that.
All right, we've locked in one. So now we have Cameron Monaghan, we have Yuri Lowenthal, and we have Andre Pena. Now, Josh has said that he doesn't really have much of a horse in the race, which is unfortunate, but it helps with narrowing this down. I kind of want to say, and I hate to do this because Spider-Man 2 is great, but I kind of want to cut Yuri. Here's why. Alan already talked up Resident Evil 4 a good amount, and not necessarily Luis, but said that was their lock-in, so I believe them. Cameron Monaghan is my lock-in, because, I don't know, he fucking killed it. He's great. I love Cal Kestis as a character. I think he's fantastic. Yuri Lowenthal is great, but is such a prolific voice actor that, like, he's been great across the board. The dude wins constantly. And, like, did as great in Spider-Man 2 as he did in Spider-Man 1. And I don't really have anything, like, wow to say about it, because he's just great. So could we agree that his greatness gets him kicked off the list?
I was kind of hoping that was the route this was going to go down.
Because at least you've got kind of some, we have enough room for, you know, more not as talked about names, less high profile names. Alan, how do you feel about this explanation?
Okay, so at least based on how I played the game, Yuri Lowenthal is, his performance is something else. Like, it really, it truly is something else compared to everything he's done before. Ironically, both him and Cameron Monaghan, they both have similar, there are similar moments with both of them. Like, with both their respective characters, that they go for a similar type of style based on what's going on with their characters in certain moments of the game, or certain moments in their respective games. But unfortunately, Cameron Monaghan keeps, like, he stays consistent with everything.
Mm.
And it kind of felt like bipolar Peter Parker for a bit. Like for a little stretch of Spider-Man 2.
Uh-huh.
Which, oh man, it'd be crazy if that had to happen one day. If Marvel just announced. That'd be a bad story arc in a Spider-Man comics if Peter became bipolar. Yeah, we can get Yuri.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it and lock this in. That went rather smoothly, and I'm happy with it. Now we have to vote, which kind of makes it a little hard because, you know what? I'm just gonna say fuck it, Alan. You get to pick this one because you've seen all these, you've played all these. You're kind of the best person that can rank these.
So I personally think that the way we have it, the way we have it set up right now, is the best way. Like that is the best order to have it in.
Okay.
Because Karen Monahan is his second go around as the character. Andre Pena, it was his first and only go around with the character of Luis. But he did so much to change the character and bring the character to life rather than, or to bring it even more to life when compared to the original performance that was done by the original actor in RE4. Mm-hmm. And James McCaffrey is doing Max Payne without outright saying he's Max Payne, so.
So that's always fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it. Best performance, sponsored by Man Engage Immortality. We now have Cameron Monahan, who of Cal Kestis of Jedi Survivor, Andre Pena, Luis Serra of Resident Evil 4, and James McCaffrey, Alex Casey of Alan Wake 2. Do we have one more, Ina? Oh, geez. Hold on. I'm now seeing Josh's message.
I have about 20 minutes left, but I think I can look at like a good number of the ones in the next category and think we could take a good chunk of them off, probably.
All right. I'm thinking the same thing. Because
I just want to say one thing before we move on to that about best performance.
Yeah.
I had originally started putting on a whole bunch of Baldur's Gate 3 characters on here, and after like 5 or 6 I was like, I don't think there's any way I can possibly narrow it down to just one, so I just deleted them all off of there. So in case anyone listening to this is wondering why I love those characters but didn't bother to put any of them on there, that is why.
I mean, that's kind of why we have this next category.
Yep, and that's why they're on there.
I like how you wrote them in. I mean, This one may be the hardest, but honestly, we might be able to just bank some off because we don't. Oh, I did not like that word usage. We might be able to knock some of these off of the list because we didn't all play these games. So, but one of these, I'm going to fight for. Best Ensemble Cast, sponsored by God of War Ragnarok. These are the top 3 character groups of the year. All right, you ready? Here we go. 20 minutes, probably 20 nominees. The Motley Crue of Jedi Survivor. The Tragic Victims of Resident Evil 4 Remake. The Ghosts of Dead Space. The Broken Family of Dordain. The Forces of Sonic in The Murder of Sonic and Sonic the Hedgehog. The Travelers of Pikmin 4. The Trio in Sea of Stars. The Rebels of Hi-Fi Rush. The Immortals of Avium. The Talking Flowers of Super Mario Bros. Wonder, the Federation and Friends of Star Trek Resurgence, Friends and Enemies of Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars, that's a mouthful, the Sages and Supporting Cast of Tears of the Kingdom, and anyone and everyone in Baldur's Gate 3. Everything, everywhere, all at Gate 3.
Oops, all Baldur's Gate.
Oops, all Baldur's Gate. So, how about, because I think we all added to this, Let's all pick one that we would take off.
Pikmin 4.
Pikmin 4? All right. Anyone fighting for that?
Nope.
Cool. There it goes. Josh? Josh, what would you get rid of?
Take out Super Mario RPG. I love those characters, but, I mean, it's just characters from a game, like, what, 30 years ago? So.
Well, I would say, like, aren't they just kind of the same Mario characters?
They're the, like, exact same way they're written, everything, so.
There are some different new characters, right, though, like, from that game?
I don't think there's any new characters. They did add, like, some extra scenes and stuff in, like, the end game, but really it's pretty much the exact same game.
Huh.
I just kind of want to draw attention to it because everyone should play that game if they like RPGs and Mario. So
yeah,
give it the attention now that it did not 30 years ago.
I still got to get to that, but I mentioned it in an earlier one, but it's the remake has beat out the amount of sales as the original.
Yes.
And that's awesome. Like, I'm happy people are wanting it. And then me, jeez. I mean, I put two on this list that I loved. You know what? I put three on this list that I loved. And I'm going to get rid of one of them. And I think it's going to be the Immortals of Avium. Just, again, because not enough people played it and liked it. There are better things. But I really do like the characters. Like, the Immortals of Avium are a group of a few characters that you join as being like a magic wielder that has special abilities, and yeah, all those characters are unique and enjoyable, and that's them. play the game. Fuck EA. Okay, so
I've got two that can be cut as well.
Really? Go for it.
Same.
The Ghosts of Dead Space.
Ghosts of Dead Space. Okay. Was that like meaning the crew or actual ghosts?
I technically the victims, but I already used the victims for Resident Evil 4.
Okay.
All right. And, that makes sense. Also, because it's similar thing with Super Mario RPG. It's like they're the same characters. And then there's the Sages of Tears of the Kingdom. Because it's
really,
yeah, because it's mainly just, it's basically just the next section of Breath of the Wild. And okay. It's basically like a different take on, I mean, all the games are what they are.
Yeah. But sounds like a good enough reasoning.
Yeah, but there are some new characters that introduced in Tears of the Kingdom, like the Zonai
and Pyrrha.
No, she just made herself look older. She reverted. Their version, she's no longer a child, but it's the classic anime trope of this gorgeous character is like hundreds of years old.
Yeah. The Twilight Syndrome. Okay, so we will get rid of that one. And I was going to mention that I think that the Mario goes for the Sonic one. Did we get that? Like, the forces of Sonic in Murder of Sonic are Sonic, right?
I was going to take that one off. Yeah.
It's just kind of the basic Sonic team.
It's the Sonic team. It's, I like how they're written.
Not that Sonic team,
but it's not gonna, it's not gonna hold up with all these others.
Okay. All right. And you said you had another one?
Super Mario Brothers. The talking
really?
Flowers. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're cute. I love them. Some people hate them, but I mean, it's just a fun thing to run by and hear them talk to you and stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, and there's all, like, there. Aside from Prince Florian, There's really no, like, there aren't that many new interesting characters.
Huh. I would have thought that that would have made it, just because of, like, I don't know, the flowers. I remember being such a big thing that you could shut them off. I think there's an option, right?
Yeah.
They were such a talking point, pun intended.
I love them so much, but
yeah, fun fact. The replacement, the person they got to replace, Charles Martinet.
Uh huh.
He voiced
the flowers.
No, he didn't voice the flowers, but he. There was a Dragon Ball fan, an animated fan project,
mm-hmm.
Called Dragon Balls, I think it's either Dragon Ball Z R&R or Dragon Ball R&R, where it's like a what if of Raditz and Goku being on.
Oh.
Oh, did we lose you?
No, sorry about that. so like, the new voice actor for Mario Luigi basically played Raditz in Dragon Ball R&R, which was like a fan project of like a what if scenario of Goku and Raditz being on Earth, and like Goku's married to Chi-Chi, Raditz is married to Launch, and I had come across that before the casting or the recast was announced for the Mario games, and I'm just like, wow, that is a dream come true.
Mm-hmm.
A true success story. Alrighty. Oh Jesus! Hold on one second.
Where it's going to get hard, I think.
I'm so sorry. One moment. Okay, all right. Yeah, here's where it's going to get hard. So, we have... Oh, man.
I'm just going to rip my Band-Aid off.
Yeah.
Take off Sea of Stars.
Really?
That one hurts a lot, but I really like how they did the three friends in that game. There's one event that happens with all three of them, where they each kind of, I feel like a lot of games don't really take, I don't want to spoil anything, especially in this category, but there's an event that happens like in a lot of games that don't really get a whole lot of time spent really fleshing out like the feelings and how friends interact with each other when that thing happens, or when people know it's going to happen. And the way they did it in this game really made me feel even more attached to this game and those characters, because it really showed a good friendship of them, like remembering how things were and how far a friend will go to help out their other friends, especially if they know something bad may happen to them because of it. Just, I really like the friendship of those three, and I think it's fantastic. But I can't fight for it harder than like Baldur's Gate 3. So I'm going to have to let that one go.
I mean, it stinks, because at this point I kind of want to like say, hey, let's all like pick like our number ones. And I really wanted you to get Sea of Stars on there, because it was one of the first ones written on this list. And I was like, wow, like I know Josh really loves this game. I want to get some kind of recognition in these awards. I hope that it's somewhere else. I still want to do some kind of indie podcast thing and talk about it. But you're saying that if you had to pick a number one, that wouldn't be it.
It would be Baldur's Gate 3 if I had to pick a number one.
All right, so I'm going to say let's lock in Baldur's Gate 3, which is wild because we just locked in Baldur's Gate 3 in the same episode. But that shows how fucking good it is in terms of its writing and its characters. And possibly gonna be your game of the year, but you never know. I want to say my number one, and then I'm going to ask Alan's, and I think this is how we should do it. Just kind of lock these in, and we can't be upset. Are we cool with that?
I'm fine with that.
My number one is the Rebels of Hi-Fi Rush. I knew instantly that I would love these characters. I love Hi-Fi Rush so fucking much. And it's just so, it's so well acted. Everybody is so like quirky in their own way, but then there's such a caring found family and they love each other so much. And I just love that dynamic. Their group dynamic is so much fun and you get to like see their group form throughout the whole game. It's so great. I love them. My other one I probably would have voted for was like Jedi Survivor, which I do love them too. Maybe that's Alan's pick. I don't know. The Star Trek Resurgence also has excellent characters, but Hi-Fi Rush has just an ensemble that is unforgettable to me. And I really hope that game gets a sequel, and I really hope they all come back. Now, Alan, take us home. What's your number one?
Resident Evil 4.
Really?
Really.
All righty. Do you want to briefly explain within 3 minutes here what draws you to that?
Yes. All the main characters, all the main hero characters, and some of the villainous characters are victims in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Leon is a victim of Raccoon City. Luis is a victim of the setting. Krauser is a victim of Saddler.
Like your main cast has pretty much been affected by the world at hand.
Yeah.
Bad card.
Yeah, I shared, like in our little group chat, I shared the new song, the song that plays, like the final song that plays in the game after, like while the credits are rolling. And it just perfectly encapsulates what's the role, like the what's going on with it, like the motivations and everything that, or the what Leon is trying to do, like he's trying to save someone when he on the like for, to atone for being unable to save anyone when the Raccoon City event when the Raccoon City event happened.
Okay.
There's a certain line that gets said. I'm gonna wait till we actually get to the actual Game of the Year itself, Game of the Year award itself to mention, because it just expresses, or it just defines the game so well.
Hmm.
And the ultimate villain, or the ultimate villain, the ultimate victims of Resident Evil 4 are honestly the enemies.
Yeah.
Like the Plaga. Not the Plaga, the Ganados. As pretty much everyone knows now that, like, the backstory between that, or with that whole situation.
Hmm. Well, I like that depiction of all of these, or description, rather, of all of these characters.
Since Resident Evil 4 Remake is a remake, I think it should go below Hi-Fi Rush.
Okay. I'm cool with it. I wasn't going to move Hi-Fi Rush up because it felt like I locked that in too good. But yeah. And I think Baldur's Gate just should go on top because just, I don't know. It's just
the scope of that game and what they do with not just the playable cast, but just literally every single character in that game is just I can't even put words to just like how massive like that script and all of that had to have been to make everything work and work as great as it did.
I'm a sucker for Josh's passion. Like, I like when he talks passionately about things because we don't get this side of Josh all the time. But I'm gonna let you have it, boy. So, best ensemble cast sponsored by God of War Ragnarok now becomes best ensemble cast sponsored by Baldur's Gate 3. Because number one is anyone and everyone in Baldur's Gate 3. Number two is the Rebels of Hi-Fi Rush. And number three is the Tragic Victims of Resident Evil 4 Remake. I think all three of those descriptions are pretty great. I think that all three of those choices are pretty great. And I think that is going to wrap it up for our third episode of Game of the Year nominations or awards. We have two more of these to go. Hopefully the next two will have Emmett in them because I want to obviously have him in our Game of the Year talk. But yeah, thank you all so much for listening. If you like what you heard, please go listen to the other ones. Please go and subscribe to our podcast feed that you're listening to and find us on all the other places, our website, our YouTube channel, and yeah, we thank you for listening, and we will see you in the next one. I got that game of the year, game of the year, game of the year, game of the year, of the year, yeah, yeah, game of the year, game of the year, game of the year.